Hello? Okay, let's start. So before I get started, I want to get a sense of who you are. Raise your hand if you're a student in technology. Okay. Put your hand up again. And keep your hand up if you're specifically a student in programming and computer science. Okay, so that's a lot of you. Now put your hands down. And raise your hand if you are a developer, a professional. Okay, great. So this talk is for both of you, both groups. My name is Emily Stolfo. I work at TenGen on the Ruby driver to MongoDB. Has anybody heard of MongoDB? Okay, great. So it's a database. It's a no document database. I also, at night, teach Ruby on Rails at Columbia University. I went to Columbia University as an undergraduate a couple years ago, and now I'm back there a couple years later after working professionally teaching to students, among which I was a couple of years ago. And I've realized, ironically, when I'm teaching at Columbia, Ruby on Rails, I learned outside of school. And I bet a lot of you, both students and professionals in this room, may realize that you've had the same experience, whether you've had an internship as a student and you've realized that there are a lot of things you have to know in that internship that you weren't taught in school. And if you're a professional, you may realize that you learned a lot in school and it was a great foundation, but there's a whole lot of things that you have to know professionally that you didn't learn in school. So I realized after going back to Columbia and starting to teach Ruby on Rails, I've done it now for 3 semesters. I started spring 2012, did fall 2012, and then spring 2013. I realized that even with a CS degree, I studied computer science at Columbia, that I didn't really learn how to program until I was on the job. And I realized that I needed to do something about this to help the next generation of programmers coming through Columbia University specifically. I also realized that there's a lot of things that we can do in the community as hackers, as self-taught coders, as open source users, to help educate people who maybe don't have a CS degree or those who do and are lacking some of those skills that we only learn on the job. The reality is, in the U.S. specifically, the U.S. Department of Labor predicts that in 2020, there'll be 1.4 million jobs in computer programming, and U.S. universities are only prepared to fill 30% of those roles. So there are a lot of computer programming jobs available over time, more and more every day, and U.S. universities are not keeping up with that pace and educating a sufficient number of people to fill those roles. I don't have numbers on Brazil, but I bet it's the same situation. Tech is growing internationally. So in talking about academia and hacking and what you can do as a student to better prepare yourself for the hacking culture and what you can do as professionals, as hackers in the community to help educate students and your teammates, your colleagues, your mentors, your managers, etc. I'm going to talk about teaching Rails at Columbia, what that's like, and then I'll talk about these things that I like to call hacker habits. So over the course of teaching at Columbia, I've realized that I need to incorporate some more skills and behaviors into my class, not just Ruby on Rails, not just the syntax, not just the framework itself, but there are other things that I need to teach, and I call these hacker habits, and I'll share a couple of them with you, about 5, and I bet you'll find that a lot of them you do naturally, and I bet you'll find that a lot of them you didn't learn in school. And then I'll talk about how you can get involved as a hacker, specifically some things you can do, both the students in the audience and the professionals, and the educators as well. Is anybody an educator, a teacher? Okay, great. So hopefully a lot of you will see that there's something that you can do. Before I go any further, though, I've given this talk a few times, and a bunch of people were a little bit confused as to what I was talking about when I say hacker. I'm sticking with a positive hacker here. So I know hacker can be something positive, it can be negative, it can be positive and negative, so ambiguous, but I'm really sticking with a positive sense of a hacker here. I think there's a, if you go to code.org, there's a campaign for trying to promote getting coding taught in more schools, whether they're high schools, colleges, and more exposure to coding to younger students. And Mark Zuckerberg is interviewed in this video, and he says, he describes his first experience with computer science or programming, first experience learning how to program, as focusing on a goal, not trying to learn all of computer science to get there, but looking things up as he went along, and not being afraid to make errors, to make mistakes, and learning from those mistakes. So this is, I think, a really good definition of a hacker. Someone who's not concerned about learning everything all at once, all of the theory, and then putting it into practice. It's someone who's willing to make mistakes and keep trying until they get to a specific goal. So clever, curious, etc. So we're sticking with a positive sense of this term. To put some of this in perspective and to tell you where I'm coming from specifically and how I've developed some of these ideas and this approach to teaching while I was at Columbia, I'm going to tell you about my experience since I graduated. So currently I am on the Ruby driver team at TenGen. The Ruby driver to MongoDB is not Mongoid, that's the ODM, or Mongo Mapper, that's another ODM. The driver is the client library, the Ruby gem, that you install that helps deal with more of the networking layer, the deserialization, the serialization of BSON data types, which is the data type that MongoDB stores, into Ruby hashes. And it deals with connection pooling and more network layer stuff. It's an open source gem, and I do that full time, as well as I said, teach at Columbia. Before that, I was a Ruby on Rails developer in New York City. I was working for a company called 20 by 200, which is an online e-commerce site where you can buy artwork. Before that, I was in Paris, France, at the Louvre Museum. I was doing a master's in museum studies. I lied a little bit. At Columbia, I studied computer science and art history. So I spent 2 years studying museums in the Louvre Museum, but ironically, I ended up spending more time coding than I did studying museums, and I'll talk about that in a bit. Before that, I was at IBM. I was a business consultant, and I studied computer science and art history at Columbia. So that's my background, and that's, you know, it's both traditional and untraditional, but I think keeping that in mind might help you understand my perspective coming back to Columbia given my experience in the professional world. Do you guys know who Y the Lucky Stiff is, the Ruby developer? Y the Lucky Stiff was a pretty active, very well-known Ruby developer between 2006 and 2009. He specifically was an advocate for getting more exposure to younger students to programming. Specifically, in 2009, at a symposium at Carnegie Mellon University in the United States, he gave a talk where he said that we need to get more people learning how to code at a younger age, and how can we do this? And he proposed that we need to get more teachers who are educated on how to teach programming, or we need more programmers who function as well as educators. So they're these dual programmer teachers. And it's a little difficult to get teachers to teach how to program if they haven't had any experience programming, because you have to teach them programming first, and you have to teach them how to program. But programmers, all you have to do is teach them how to teach, which seems like a little less work than the first option. So he really called for academia and hacking not to be mutually exclusive. And I really agree with why. Although he gave this talk in 2009, right before he disappeared from, he shut down his public presence. He's no longer active really publicly. I do agree with him that academia and hacking should not be mutually exclusive. So back to my experience. How did I learn Ruby on Rails? So I have a CS degree, but I didn't learn Ruby on Rails in school, and now I'm teaching Ruby on Rails, and I'm a Ruby developer. So my story is that I was at the Louvre. It was a two-year master's program in museum studies, and for my master's thesis project, I wanted to do something technical. I wanted to build something. So I ended up working with the Conservation Institute at the Louvre to build a Ruby on Rails system that allowed researchers in the institute to log samplings they had taken from artworks. They already had a system that logged metadata on the artworks themselves, but no way of connecting historical, cultural information about an artwork back to the scientific information they gathered when they actually study them at this institute. So I wanted to do this project, and I talked to the head of the technologies lab there at the Conservation Institute, and she said, oh, wow, this is amazing. You have a dual degree in computer science and art history. You want to do this project? And I said, great, yeah. And she said, it's in Ruby on Rails. And I said, no problem. I have a computer science degree. I had no idea what Ruby on Rails was, never done any web programming. So I was basically right at the beginning of a hacker journey, or learning how to be a hacker. I never had to do anything like that, teach things to myself and using internet really as a primary resource. So I started doing this project, and my roadmap was completely blank. And I bet a lot of you have had this same exact experience, either on an internship if you're a student, or as a professional after you graduated, or even someone who didn't study computer science or programming academically and have taught yourself. So what do? We look for resources. My only option at this point was to find resources myself. In particular, a few, I'll just name them, and I bet a lot of these will be very familiar to you, example projects. So there was this existing Ruby on Rails application at this conservation center that I was able to use as an example. And I was able to use the schema as motivation for my own schema. Just basically how it was set up, looking at, I know MVC in theory, I read about it, I was trying to figure out what this whole Rails thing was, but actually looking at it, how it actually works together, it made it much easier to be successful at this project that I was building. The internet. This might be totally obvious. It might seem like, of course, yeah, we use the internet, but this was not obvious to me. So coming out of academia, studying computer science as an undergraduate, I never used the internet. Because, in particular, at Columbia, and I'm sure it's the case at many other universities, there are very aggressive plagiarism policies. So if there's any sign that you're plagiarizing, there's this whole process that's put into place, and they highly, highly discourage using the internet as a source of content that you could potentially put into your own projects. So I had to learn how to use the internet, really, for building this app. Trying things out. So this goes along with what Mark Zuckerberg said. So not being afraid to fail, make mistakes, just really forging ahead and figuring things out as I went along. Trying things out. Books, of course, are still important, although the internet is something that we use very heavily. Colleagues. So I reached out to a lot of my computer science classmates from Columbia, and I said, hey, does anybody know anything about web development? Because I don't, and I have to do this whole project. My father's a computer science professor, so he has a bunch of students who were familiar with Ruby on Rails, and I chatted with them online. So really, reaching out to other people, colleagues, people that I knew in the community. Community. At the time in Paris, this was 3 or 4 years ago, meetups, I had never heard of a meetup. Meetups, I think, are probably not quite as popular in Paris as they are in other parts of the world. So it was pretty difficult to find in-person resources or people I could actually talk to face-to-face and work with. But I did, in using all this open source software and really getting a feel for what the Rails community was like, I realized that there is a community, and the community can be a resource. And that was a pretty valuable lesson for me as well. And then users. So this might seem obvious again, but I never had to build something where I actually had an interaction with the user of that system, or never actually really had to build anything that anybody but myself had to use. So I worked with, there were 30 scientists that I was working with in an agile fashion. I would meet with them once every 2 weeks and talk to them about what they needed out of the system, whether it was the format of the data, whether it was the way that they upload data or data entry, or even the user interface. So all of these things was a really good experience for me, thinking about the end users of a system, because ultimately, Many of us, most of us, build things for other people. We don't build things just for ourselves, usually. And geographical and physical resources were limited. I just say this as an aside, really, but in Paris at the time, there's not a huge tech scene like there is in a lot of places, so there wasn't, you know, that many meetups or events that I could go to try to reach out to other people. But this experience in particular, why did I share this with you? This experience in particular is what prepared me for the job that I then took in New York City. So I was in Paris for a while, then I came back to New York, and I took a job at 20 by 200, this art startup, where I was a Ruby on Rails developer. And in particular, I had to learn how to take all of that stuff that I learned in doing a master's degree, sort of this thesis project that didn't really have, you know, fiscal goals or really needed to make a profit in any way, to being in an e-commerce company where I had to really worry about my code working all the time, the site not going down, making mistakes, actually had repercussions. In particular, my first foray into writing a cron job, I wrote this cron job that was supposed to reduce the price of a particular artwork that we chose on Friday morning at 8 a.m. by 30%. And this artwork was flagged by someone at the company for being reduced to that price. It was a flash sale, so it would last all day and then go back to its original price at midnight. So I wrote this cron job for the first time, and I get up on Friday morning, and I go online, and I check to make sure the artwork's price was reduced at 8:03. Great, it was reduced, went back to sleep. Went to work. A couple of hours later, a colleague IMs me and says, "Emily, why is this artwork 20 cents?" So effectively, I was the cron job was doing something wrong. It was a Rails callback that was saving after there's a callback where you can trigger it after save versus after create, and I was doing it after save, where it should have been after create. But recognizing that and reacting quickly and fixing my mistake was a skill that I learned at the Louvre, making mistakes and figuring them out and thinking quickly, reacting quickly. And I realized that this is really important, and this is something that we all need to know before we make those mistakes. So now, back to the present. I'm teaching this class. As I said, I've taught it three times, three semesters, and I'm probably going to teach it in the fall as well, and then hopefully again in the future. This Rails class, I realized, was an opportunity for me to try to address some of the holes in my own education. So when I first taught the class, the first semester, I made some assumptions. I went in and I started talking about MVC and front-end, back-end databases and how you structure your data, schema, and I realized that that's great. Those are all facts. You can look them up online. But I'm teaching so much more than Rails in my class. It's not just Ruby on Rails. Anybody can follow a tutorial online, but the behaviors that you have as students, as hackers, as professionals, I needed to bring into my class. I couldn't just teach Ruby on Rails. So as an Agile teacher, I realized after this first semester, I was like, wait, I need to do some other stuff in this class. So I revamped the curriculum, and now after the third semester, I feel like I've gotten to a place where I'm able to teach Ruby on Rails, but emphasize certain hacker behaviors as well in the class, because I think that's just as important as learning Ruby on Rails. I say to my class that Ruby on Rails is like the gateway drug to web development. It's, in my opinion, it makes web development a little bit more approachable because there is this whole object-oriented structure around it and this framework and DSL that makes it approachable for students at Columbia specifically who are taught very, from the beginning, object-oriented programming. It's really emphasized a lot in many of the classes. And I think that that's great, but if I want them to be able to go on in the next semester or an internship or in a job in the future and really get something out of this class and know how to be a programmer in Ruby on Rails or any other web framework, they need to learn these hacker habits or these behaviors that we all have. The other thing is, this type of class is rare, and not just at Columbia. So that's why I felt it was even more important that I pack as much as I could into this class. This class is semesters at Columbia. I'm not sure how it is at other universities. It differs a little bit in the US, and I'm sure abroad as well. This class at Columbia is half a semester. A semester is, I think, about 3.5 months. So, does that make sense? I guess it's about 3 months or so. And so half a semester is about 6 weeks. And it goes on a little bit because their final project lasts for a couple weeks after the last lecture. So it's not even a full semester. And if these skills and these behaviors are what we're all doing outside of academia and what is required of us on the job, then it's a little surprising that a class like this only gets half a semester. I also looked up the curriculum at some of the other major computer science programs at the major universities in the US, and I don't want to name any in particular because for the most part they're excellent programs, and I don't want to say, oh, this curriculum is bad, but I looked up the major ones, and I'm sure we're all thinking of the same ones, and very, very few of them have classes even on web development. And most of us are doing web development. So something needs to change. But you also might ask yourself, should academia change? Foundations of computer science are essential. In particular, for my job now, I work for a database company. So the foundations of computer science are even more essential for me now than they were when I was a web developer at an e-commerce startup. I'm not saying we should change academia and we should teach only web development. It should become more skills-oriented and behavior-oriented. I really think the foundations of computer science are really important. Understanding hardware and the implications of performance and memory management, etc. But the other thing is that a generation in tech is arguably shorter than one in other subjects. So I went to RailsConf. It's the worldwide Ruby on Rails conference at the end of April this year, and beginning of May, in Portland, Oregon, in the US. And DHH, the creator of Rails, in his keynote said, "Happy birthday, Rails. It's 10 years old this year. 10 years ago, we were all using flip phones. And now we all have much, much different devices that we use for communicating." So 10 years ago, we were all using flip phones, and he used the 10 years as an example of how quickly time is passing in tech. Then a generation in tech is arguably shorter than a generation in other fields. So if tech is changing so fast like this, what should academia do? Should academia hire in new people every single year to teach the most relevant technologies? Should academia try to focus on the foundations and let people figure out that other stuff for themselves? I don't really know, but what I can do is change my class and try to incorporate some of those really important behaviors into my class at Columbia. And in doing this, I realized that we're creating our own academia. So let's say I didn't go to Columbia. I learned pretty much, I don't know, 70% of what I do now on the job. I didn't even need to go to school to know some of it. So we as hackers outside of academia are creating our own academia. There is a way to learn even outside of academia. And a hacker-centered curriculum is critical in academia to some extent, given how we define ourselves. So as I said, TenGen, MongoDB, is a database. And I said that the foundations of computer science are even more essential to know now in my current job. But TenGen, even on their, you can see it says careers culture. So when we describe our culture on the careers section of our site, we say TenGen's hacker culture. So if we're defining ourselves as hackers, and I said that you like foundations of computer science are even more essential in this company, if we define ourselves like that, I don't really know what else could possibly prove that being a hacker and having hacker skills are extremely important. So how did I develop a hacker-centered curriculum at Columbia? I had all these ideas. As I said, I revamped the curriculum. I introduced new behaviors and new activities in the class that would help them, help the students learn some of the things that I do professionally on a daily basis, and I know I didn't learn in school. But I wasn't sure if I was doing this right. So I said, I've made all these assumptions and observations and made conclusions, but I don't know if I'm actually on the right path. Maybe I'm crazy, and maybe this isn't really how things are. So what I did was, in the second to last class, last semester, I asked my students if they would be open to having a discussion for a couple of minutes and answering a bunch of my questions. So I asked them 5 questions, and they used something called Poll Everywhere, which is an app where I can ask a question, and you can text in a response anonymously, or use a browser to send in a response anonymously to a question that I asked. And then, so these 5 questions, I think, add a little bit more color and give some numbers to the observations that I've been making. The first question I asked was, is this class different from other classes you've taken at Columbia? And if so, how? So I really wanted to see if, I think I'm doing something different, but let me confirm that these students say that this class is a little different. Let me first say, though, before I give you these numbers, that this past semester I had 50 students, 50. First semester I had 20, second semester I had about 30, and now I'm up to 50. And I think that's actually the max. And particularly this lecture, when I asked these questions, there were 40 students in the classroom. So these numbers, so when I give you percentages, that's what I'm talking about, 40 out of 40 students. So this question, is this class different from other classes you've taken? 97% said yes. And I said, how? How is this different? And the words that I noticed were modern, less rigid, more creative, solving own problems, less focused on grading. And so this is great. I looked at this and I said, this is really good. I'm getting somewhere. I'm doing something different. And when I say, and the things that I'm doing different are the things that I want to be doing different. The second question was, if you've had an internship, do you feel that you had all the necessary skills or that you were lacking in one particular area? 96% said they felt like they were lacking skills. So if they're doing this computer science program at Columbia University, which has a reputation for being a very good university, and they still felt like on the job, that 96% of them felt like they were lacking, something's not right. This is a quote from one student where they said they had an internship where they had to know CSS, JavaScript, jQuery, HTML, Python, Ajax all at once. The point of this quote is not necessarily that they had to know each one of these things and they hadn't been exposed to it. The point is that it was a lot to take in and they learned a lot. So the point is that there's a lot going on, and being able to not be overwhelmed by all of these different languages or technologies and being able to understand how everything fits together, I think that's lacking a bit, because in particular the classes are focused on one specific subject, theory, and then you practice it, and then you do some more theory, and then you practice it. And figuring out how everything works together, I think, is something that makes web development in particular very difficult, in the beginning at least. The third question was, do you participate in hackathons? I asked this question because I thought maybe my class is an elective, you're not required to take it. So I thought maybe the students in my class had never gone to a hackathon and weren't part of that culture really and hadn't been exposed to it. Because at Columbia, they do have a lot of extracurricular activities for hacking with other people, having side projects with your classmates. And so I asked this question to see if maybe I've gotten a sampling of students who haven't actually been exposed to hacker culture. And it was actually 50-50. So 50% of the students say, yeah, I go to hackathons. And 50%, most of them said, I tried one or two, but it's not really my thing. So this confused me because I thought, okay, so 50% of them have been, so that's 20 students. 20 students out of 40 had been to hackathons. Why don't they really know what semantic versioning is? And why don't they really know how to put everything together and that the fact that they have to start up their database before they can connect to it, those things. So I'm not sure what to conclude from this, but I'm guessing that maybe hackathons are more of a social thing, and they go to hackathons maybe for, I don't know, the free food, or maybe it's just something they do with their friends on the weekend. And because it's a one-time, one-off event, you're not developing any real valuable long-term skills from them. Maybe it's more focused on socializing. The next question was, have you used open source software before this class? I asked this for the same reason as a hackathon question. I wanted to see if maybe I'd gotten a sampling of students who had never used open source software and weren't familiar with the culture of the community or how to use open source software. And most of them, actually I think all but one had said they had used open source software. So again, I was a little confused by this. I was thinking, if you've used open source software, and they knew which open source software they had used. It wasn't like, they didn't say, yes, I have. They said, yeah, I've used Python, like blah, blah, blah. They've used all this. They named a bunch of things that they had used. So it's not like just a buzzword they had heard. So I don't really know why they don't, maybe the culture isn't exposed to them, and maybe they're not encouraged to use GitHub as much, and in fact, I know they're not using GitHub that much. So not sure what to conclude from that, but at least I know now that open source culture and open source software is not as present in the undergraduate education in computer science at Columbia, and maybe I can make the assumption that that's the case in a lot of other universities. So maybe that's something I need to emphasize more in my class as well. And the last thing was I asked them if they had a GitHub account before the class. So I did use GitHub for the students to hand in their projects. And for me, that was obvious. Like, I could check out a specific commit at a specific time. I could see exactly when they handed in their homework. So there was no ambiguity about them, like, trying to upload their code to an email that didn't send from their phone. It was sent hours later, blah, blah, blah. So GitHub is the easiest thing to use when you need to grade people's projects. And 90% of them said they had had a GitHub account before the class. And I said, I was thinking, why, I had to explain how to use GitHub to my students. And I was thinking, if 90% of them had a GitHub account, why did I need to explain it so much? And a lot of them, I think, use them for personal projects and didn't use it. It wasn't incorporated into their method of programming. It wasn't natural for them to use GitHub. And I know that it's not for some students in particular, because one student came to me at the end of one of the classes, and he was applying for an internship for the summer, and he said that he was telling me he was really excited because the internship was going to use Ruby on Rails. So he told them that he was in a Ruby on Rails class, and he was excited to use what he learned in class. And he said that he, after class, was going to have a interview, and then he was going to email them a zip file of his source code. And I said, you're going to email them a zip file of your source code, please use GitHub. So I do expose them to GitHub and Git, but I guess I need to take it one step further and say this is really the standard. This is how you should be sharing code with others. So that, for me, at least confirms that I'm getting somewhere, and that a lot of these, and show me that maybe next semester I do need to incorporate more emphasis on open source software and explain it and really say, emphasize the use of GitHub and some other open source projects. But back to you. So that's what I'm doing at Columbia. As open source contributors, we often focus on how we can contribute back. And we focus on contributing back in the form of code. But we don't only have to contribute back in the form of code. We can contribute back in the form of knowledge and education as well. And mentoring. We can mentor other younger programmers who are newer to the community so that they can develop these skills as quickly as possible. So hacker habits. These are these behaviors that I've identified, as I said, that are essential for us as hackers, as professionals, as people who work on open source software, use open source software, that we might take for granted, and that I decided I really need to incorporate into my curriculum. This is a sampling of them. I try to teach a lot of them in my class. As I said, it's 6 weeks long. There are a lot of birds to kill, and I only have one stone, so I try to pack in as much as I can. And as I said, I do teach Ruby on Rails. But these hacker habits, I try to teach through activities, so through homeworks and activities in class and just really how I communicate some of this. And I bet a lot of you will find, you'll see these hacker habits and you'll be like, oh yeah, sure, I do that all the time, without even realizing that you didn't learn it in school. You learned it on your own. You learned it from someone else in the community. So what are these hacker habits? The first one, treat the internet as your textbook. If I had Wi-Fi, which I don't, I would click on this, and it would go to, if you know, let me Google that for you, which is a thing online where you can type in a specific Google search and create an animation where it'll show someone typing in that exact Google query and show the page of Google results. So you let me Google that for you is sort of this joke about if someone asks you a question and the answer is obviously available on the internet, you send them this link because it's like, why don't you just Google it? So I show that video on my first day of class, and I say to my students that I'm available as much as possible. I can switch to... It's okay. It was just one example, so it's okay. Thanks. I'll like tweet out the link later if you want. it's a joke. So I show this on my first day of class, and I say, I'm really available for questions. Email me anytime you want. I have a TA, so email my TA. But if you email me a question and I can Google that question and find the answer on the first page of Google results, I'm not responding because you should be Googling things for yourself. So that means that I often get emails from students with like paragraphs of I search here and here and here, I search Stack Overflow, I search my textbook, blah, 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 and then I still couldn't find the answer to my question, which might be a little bit extreme, and I do push this a lot in class, but at least I'm getting my point across. I also get emails forwarded from my TA with questions that students are afraid to ask me, but my point is I really want them to realize that the internet should be their primary resource. They should Google errors before they ask me about them, because they need to get into this habit. The other thing is, inevitably, the week before my first class, I get emails from students saying, I saw the class site, I don't see a textbook listed, what textbook should I get to prepare for the first day of class? And I always say, the internet is your textbook. We're not using a textbook in this class. The internet is going to be your primary resource. So that's hacker habit one. And I bet a lot of you are like, yeah, sure, that's obvious. I do that all the time. But it's not obvious to these undergrads. Two, able to debug code you didn't write. How do I teach this? This is extremely important. In my current job at Tengen, I maintain the Ruby driver to MongoDB along with two other Ruby developers or some part-time Ruby developers as well. I didn't write the Ruby driver to MongoDB. I add features, I debug it, we're in the process of writing a new one. I have to respond to Jira tickets, to pull requests. So I'm every single day debugging and dealing with a code base that I didn't write. And I bet a lot of you could say the same about your jobs. How do you teach this to students? In their second homework assignment, I give them some code in a skeleton app that I put up on GitHub, and it has authentication built into the app. And we learn about controllers and how requests are dealt with in authentication in Rails during that lecture. And I say, I have this skeleton app up. Take it and put it into your app, but there are 5 bugs, and you have to solve these bugs. And so they all are excited because they get code from the teacher, and of course they leave it to the last minute. My class is on Monday. I hold office hours on Sunday, which means I go up to Columbia, and I am available for questions in person for 4 hours on a Sunday afternoon. And my office hours that week have never been busier. I had probably 3 times the amount of students that I normally have in office hours that week. Because debugging code you didn't write is not easy. It's not free code that works. It's code that you have to reverse engineer and really understand in order to fix. And I think this was a really important assignment for them to have. The third hacker habit, build something to solve a real-life problem. This is, again, like what Mark Zuckerberg said. He was focused on a particular goal. He wanted to build something, and he figured out how to get there. So how do I teach this? I thought it might be fun this past semester to treat my class almost like a hackathon. So I wanted my students to build a website that they would use in theory, or people like them would use. So what I thought was, up until then, for the first 2 semesters, last semester as well, 3 semesters, I used Google Sites to manage the homework assignments, announcements, the syllabus, to upload my presentations and slides if they were available. But I really wanted to use a Ruby on Rails site, and it was a little bit embarrassing that I didn't have a Ruby on Rails site for my class. So I had them build one last semester. I had them, the entire class, build a site that they would, or their classmates would use next semester, that I would use as a teacher to manage the course content. And I think this was really great for them because they, as I said, like when I was at the Louvre, it was the first time I had to think about an end user of my system and work with them to work out requirements and specifications. And so I thought this was really cool because there was a little bit of friendly competition between the students in particular, because I said the strongest app I would then take and use next semester and work with the student to deploy it on Heroku. So there was this sort of like motivation for the students, especially the ones who were more advanced. There was obviously with 50 students, you have a little bit of variation in the levels and the knowledge of the students. I think this was great in particular for the students who wanted a little bit more of a challenge. And I think this was really good because over the course of the entire semester, they worked on one app and added features with each homework assignment. And instead of, as I said, theory, practice is great for knowing specific things, but for putting everything together, sometimes you need them to have a long-term goal. So I thought this was really cool. Engage with the community. You can engage with the community in person, and you can engage with the community through code. So through code, I like to call this the take a penny, leave a penny mentality. So it's this concept of when you go to buy coffee and there's a little jar of pennies, and if you need a penny, you can take it from there. But if you just have some change, you can put it in there. So it's this mentality of, oh, I use Stack Overflow for code all the time, but I can contribute back to Stack Overflow, answer questions, and put my own code up there. So how do I get the students used to doing this? It's a little bit difficult, but I try to encourage them to use Stack Overflow as much as possible and also pull requests. I have them in their final project, they're paired up with another student, and they have to do something pretty simple in the other student's app, but they do it through a pull request. So I spend some time in class showing them pull requests and how that works and the etiquette and how you thank them and you're polite and how that actually works, because that's what we do in the Ruby Gyro. We actually use pull requests for our own code reviews as well as letting other people contribute. Engage with the community in person. In particular in New York, there are tons of tech events going on all the time, specifically meetups. And many of the students, to my surprise, had never been to a meetup and hadn't even heard of meetups. And I thought that was a shame because meetups in particular in New York are so vibrant. There's so many of them. And you can meet some amazing people and collaborate on some really awesome projects. So in their first homework assignment, when they're first getting set up, I have them make their first commit. They have to sign up for a meetup and put the meetup they signed up for in their README. This past semester, I realized that I should probably check to see what meetup they're signed up for, because a lot of them signed up for beer enthusiast meetup. And I was like, guys, you have to sign up for a tech meetup. But at least I expose them to, I'm really going for awareness. Think critically about code. This is another difficult one. I think in encouraging people to use the internet for code, they get very comfortable with the code they find on the internet. But getting them to feel responsible for the code they find on the internet is something else. You can't just assume that code you find on the internet works, or is right, or is idiomatic Ruby, or you should put into your app. I try to tell them about how to think critically about code. In particular, I try to show them how they should decide to use one gem over another. So Ruby gems are like Python, I guess, modules they're called. So they're packages, they're libraries that you can use. There's one resource called Ruby Gems, which lists all of the gems and has statistics on those gems. So you can see how many downloads there have been for the current version when the previous versions were released. So try to show them how they should cross-reference Ruby Gems with GitHub and look at how active the maintainer is and how risky it is to take this gem and use it in their own app, to take responsibility for that code. Also, using Stack Overflow, I encourage them to use it as much as possible. But of course, if code doesn't work that they've taken from Stack Overflow, they're responsible for it. There's no excuse to say, oh, I found this on the Stack Overflow, and it's not my fault if it works. Every line of code in your app or in your code base, you're responsible for. And I want them to get used to this. So those are a sampling of five hacker habits. And I bet a lot of you will identify with many of those. But back to the reality. As I said, the number of opportunities in tech is growing. So it's all the more important that we help people learn these skills so that they can take some of these jobs, because there are more and more of them. We need to bring hacking to academia and academia to hacking. So we as hackers are creating our own academia. Academia needs to incorporate some hacking, but we can also do something else in the community. How can you get involved specifically as a hacker? These examples are specific to New York and maybe the US in general, and I'm sure you have many of these kinds of resources as well in Brazil. I don't know if you've heard of some of these. If not, look them up. They're really awesome. Skillshare is a way to teach classes, a platform online, really, to set up classes in person or to teach classes through the internet, through videos that people sign up for and pay for so you can make money. General Assembly is almost like a hacker school that is started in New York really as a co-working space, but then turned into a networking education space. And I've been talking to them about possibly doing a workshop over a weekend. They do have these 8-week immersion courses that people will quit their jobs and take and become junior Rails or web programmers afterwards. So it's really awesome for giving people a focused and quick education if they are interested in entering the tech industry. Teals, it's a program in New York specifically that where you can teach programming to high school students on your way to work for an hour once a week. Hackity Hack is a project by Why the Lucky Stiff, whom I mentioned before. Rails Girls in particular is, I think, very well known internationally. They had a workshop, I think, just recently, either in Sao Paulo or here, I'm not sure. They're a workshop for teaching females in particular Rails. But yeah, you can get involved with any of these. They're always open to more people getting involved. Because as I said, as open source users and contributors, we don't only have to contribute code. We can contribute knowledge and education as well. That said, what do you get out of it? Why should you do this? There are many benefits. Your potential colleagues will be better prepared. You can fill in the holes in academic CS curricula. I thought I knew Rails until I tried to teach Rails. There's no better way to reinforce your knowledge than to teach it. You strengthen your profile. I wouldn't be giving this talk here if I wasn't teaching at Columbia. Build your network, and karma, of course, makes you feel good. So I like to call this hackademia, this mashup between academia and hacking. Thank you. I don't know if I have time, but do I have time for questions? Or if not, find me after. Do I have time for questions or? No? Okay. Well, find me after. My Twitter handle is mstolfo, because it's a Twitter handle. Let me put it up for a second. So tweet at me if you want to talk, and I'm going to tweet out the Let Me Google That For You link because it's pretty funny. Thank you.